I'm Bex and welcome to the Week Junior Show. Today I'm joined by three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14 year olds. We've got editorial director Anna.
Hello.
Writer Michael.
Hello.
And assistant editor of the Week Junior's Science and Nature magazine, Kieran.
Hello.
This week we'll be talking about a very colourful penguin, why ancient Egyptian mummies have been on the move, and a plan to protect the planet from future pandemics. Plus, we'll have a debate all about the Winter Olympics. But before all of that, seeing as we're going to be talking about mummies in a museum, I want to know, what is the best museum that you have ever visited? Anna, you can go first.
Well, my favourite museum of all time is the Grant Museum of Zoology, which is in Bloomsbury, just around the corner from the Week Junior's office. And it is a single room packed to the rafters with strange old jars and specimens. And it was a Victorian natural history museum. So it's full of the most bizarre old bones and brains and strange creatures. It's a completely macabre and completely fascinating and well worth a visit. And it's free, so it's even better.
Oh, wow. I must walk past there a lot, but I've never heard of it. I'm going to have to go exploring next time I'm in the area. Thank you, Anna. Michael, how about you?
My favourite museum is the M.C. Escher Museum in The Hague in the Netherlands. M.C. Escher was a Dutch graphic artist who made lots of sort of mind-bending optical illusions, and the museum kind of brings his work to life in lots of fun and interesting ways. It's almost like you get to step into his artworks. And actually, if you want to learn more about M.C. Escher, then you can learn how to make your very own M.C. Escher pattern on the how-to page in this week's issue from Olaf Falafel.
Oh, great. Olaf Falafel, I love him. And Kieran, how about you?
I've picked the National Museum of Scotland, not only because it's fantastic and has this incredible section with lots of stuffed animals, which I used to love, but because it is the home to my strongest claim to fame of all time, which is that if you pause a episode of Antiques Roadshow from probably about 2006, you can see me fleetingly walk by the camera. And that's been the highlight of my life ever since, I think.
That's your claim to fame.
Listen, we take what we get, Bex.
All right. It's a very good museum choice. I have been there. It's a great shout. This was a tricky one for me. It was between three possible food-related museums. There was Cadbury World in Bourneville, chocolate museum. There was the Chocolate Museum in Belgium. But I went for the chip museum in Bruges. It's an incredible museum about the history of the potato and how fries came to be. And it sounds like it's going to be boring, but it's not. And at the end of it, you can eat some chips. It's brilliant. Right, we want to know what everybody's favourite fact from this week is as well. So, Anna, what have you got for us?
Well, this week I found out that Egypt's longest reigning pharaoh, Pepi II, became ruler at the age of 6, which just goes to show you're never too young to be powerful.
No, that's a lot of responsibility. Michael, how about you?
I found out that an alligator can have more than 2,000 teeth during its life. So not 2,000 all at once, only between 70 and 80 at once. But as the teeth fall out, they constantly get replaced. More than 2,000 teeth an alligator has during its life. So I don't know if alligator dentists are a thing, but if they are, then they'll certainly be kept very busy.
I was going to say, think of the toothpaste bills. And Kieran, how about you?
I learnt this week that an Avengers fan from the US has set the new world record for watching Avengers films. He managed to watch the Avengers Endgame 191 times, and according to my rough maths, that means he spent 24 full days of non-stop repeats watching Endgame. It's a good film. Is it worth watching that time? I'm not quite so sure.
Wow. Well, that to me feels like it could have been a real or rubbish question. And speaking of which, it's time right now for the actual real or rubbish this week. Michael, what story do you have for me?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about the Easter Bunny lately, of course, with Easter weekend having just been and gone. But did you know about a bunny in France that is known to move using handstands rather than hops? Now, its name, translated from French, is Alfort's Jumper, and when it breaks into a run, it lifts its back legs off the ground and springs forward on its front legs. It basically does a handstand rather than a hop. Now, does this story sound real to you, Bex, of a handstanding bunny, or are we hopping away from the truth?
I don't know why I find this so funny. Right, okay. Oh, my days. Right, a handstanding bunny. That's what we're dealing with here, right?
It is.
Okay, now, out of interest, can anybody here do a handstand?
Yes.
You can. Michael, can you?
Not as well as these bunnies can, but...
Okay. Kieran, can you?
Absolutely not, no.
No, right. I can't either. I just wanted to make you all feel as embarrassed as I do that I can't do one and that I don't know the answer to this. I am not sure. So I feel like it would be quite a good way of them bouncing around, wouldn't it? And it's just a bit of a different way of doing it. Maybe they're kind of showing off to the rest of the animal world. I don't know. It does seem suspiciously interesting that you've got this story around Easter time and springtime, as if it's kind of like it's very perfectly timed. Or is it too perfectly timed, Michael? That's what I'm wondering about.
That is the question.
You never give anything away! Oh, my days! Right, okay. I'm going to have to think about whether handstanding bunnies are real. In my head, I want them to be, and if I was to draw a cartoon bunny, I definitely would make that happen. But I don't know whether I can live in a world where a bunny can do something I can't. That's my problem. We'll have to have a think about this. I will find out the answer with you together. All of the listeners together will find out the answer from Michael at the end of this episode. So if you've not read your copy of the magazine yet, feel free to make your guess before the end of the show. Now it's time for our three big stories from this week. Kieran, what are you finding out about?
This week, the week ahead of us, April 12th, which is only a few days away as we record this, is a day where lots of different coronavirus lockdown restrictions in the UK will be lifted. So there's lots of things happening, so I'm going to run through some of them as quickly as I can. So on the 12th of April, in Wales, Northern Ireland and Scotland, pupils will be allowed to return to all primary, secondary and special schools, though some of them will wait for an extra week, depending on when their Easter holidays end. And other students in Wales, England and Northern Ireland who have been shielding, so that is that they live with people who are particularly vulnerable to the coronavirus, or perhaps they themselves are vulnerable to it, they can also return to school. And in England and Wales, non-essential shops like those that sell clothes, books and electronics can open, as can hairdressers. Hooray, we can get a haircut at last. So this is great news for lots of people, although it's obviously important to remember that different parts of the country have different rules, and that's going to become the case even moving forward. Some places might go back into levels of lockdown, so it's always worth checking your local guidance before you head out, just as you would check the weather. But there was another interesting coronavirus-related story this week that I wanted to talk about, and that is that during the course of this pandemic, that is the period of time when an infectious disease spreads across multiple countries at the same time, people have wondered, what can we do to prevent future pandemics from taking hold in the way that the coronavirus has? After all, because we've learnt so much about how to deal with a virus this year and last year, we have this knowledge that we can use to stop a repeat event. And this week, 20 world leaders, including Boris Johnson, who's the UK Prime Minister, as well as France's President Emmanuel Macron and German Chancellor Angela Merkel, they called for an international treaty to deal with future pandemics. And a treaty is a plan that's been agreed upon by multiple governments or organisations to work together. And in their joint statement, the leaders said that nobody is safe until everybody is safe. And they wanted to reinforce this idea that countries have to work together to protect each other if all countries are going to be safe. And that plan can also then be used in the future so that if a similar virus pops up in years ahead, we work together to make sure that it doesn't spread across the world in the way that the coronavirus has. And I think that's a really positive thing to come from this pandemic, is that we can use all of that information and learning that we've got to prevent something similar from happening again in
the future. Yeah, that's made me really hopeful, Kieran, because obviously we've gone through quite a big thing in the world, but it's nice to know that our leaders are kind of looking ahead and thinking, how can we work together in the future? That's great, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really good, and it is reassuring to know that we won't just go back to normal and forget about what's happened, and that we will actually make sure that we take as much learning as we can from the coronavirus pandemic to protect people in the future.
Now, Michael, I believe you have quite a different story for us. Can you tell us what you've been finding out about this week?
I do, yeah. So this is a very fun story for anyone who's interested in ancient Egypt, because on the 3rd of April, the mummified remains of Egypt's ancient rulers were paraded through the capital city of Cairo. Now, a mummy is the body of a person or animal that has been preserved after death. And these mummified pharaohs were being transported across the city from the Egyptian Museum, which is where they've been on display since 1902, to a brand new museum that's opening called the National Museum of Egyptian Civilization. Now, there were 22 mummies in total, 18 kings and 4 queens, and they were paraded in the order of their reigns. And it was a 4-hour-long event called the Pharaoh's Golden Parade. There was a light show, there was musical performances. It was a huge spectacle. And what I found particularly interesting about this was how they went about transporting the mummies, because obviously they're very delicate, they don't want them to be damaged. So each mummy was transported in a specially made vehicle, which actually had their names on the side. And these vehicles were fitted with shock absorbers, and the road that they were going along to the museum had actually been repaved prior to the parade, so that it was nice and smooth, no potholes, no bumps along the way, so that these mummies would have a perfectly smooth, nice journey from one museum to the other. And the Egyptian government is hoping that this new museum, this new exhibit, will encourage lots of people, obviously, when coronavirus restrictions on travel are over, to go to the country and to see these mummies on display. But interestingly, not everyone was actually happy about the fact that this was happening. There are a lot of kind of strange beliefs and superstitions about curses to do with the mummies. And some people thought that by disturbing them, by moving them, that it had put some sort of curse on the country, because there's been lots of kind of accidents and incidents in Egypt over the past few weeks. And some people think that moving these mummies might be the reason why. But there's a lot of excitement about this new display. The parade was a huge event in the country, and obviously a very exciting and interesting story, as I said, for anyone who's interested in that part of history.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure a lot of our listeners and your readers will have done ancient Egyptians at school. So this is quite a big deal. I love the idea of seeing a parade of mummies go by. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. To kind of see almost a kind of ceremonial, in a way. I mean, you can imagine these ancient rulers, when they were alive, would have been kind of treated with this sort of ceremony and circumstance around them. So to kind of see that in a way brought back in the modern day is quite interesting.
Oh, I can't wait to check that out in the magazine. Now, Anna, tell me, what have you been finding out about?
Well, I've been finding out about a very unusual penguin. So say the word penguin, and most people think of a large black and white flightless bird with a comical walk. So it's fair to say that photographer Yves Adam was very surprised to see a pale yellow penguin on the island of South Georgia in the South Atlantic Ocean. The bird was one of a colony of about 120,000 king penguins that Yves had been taking pictures of. He was there as part of an expedition. Anyway, he spotted this strange pale yellow penguin as it swam into the shore and managed to take a few photographs of it before it disappeared into the crowd of other penguins. When he got back, so these photos were actually taken in 2019. When he got back and sorted through the photos, he decided to share images of this penguin on social media. And so they were released a couple of months ago. And the penguin's unusual colour really got scientists excited and resulted in a lot of discussion about what might have caused it to have such a strange colour. Some people thought that its pale colour might have been the result of a condition called albinism, and that's when a person or an animal is born with a condition that makes their skin and hair appear pale because they lack a chemical called melanin that gives these features colour. So you might have seen, for example, white tigers, or in the park near to where I live, there are a few white deer. Others, however, believe that because the bird has some colour, in that it has some pale yellow along with a lot of white, it's more likely to be leukistic. And leukism is when a creature has some melanin but at reduced levels, and this means that their colouring is often quite pale and patchy, so they're not completely white. They do have a little bit of colour, but it's not as it would normally be. Anyway, the photographer said that the penguin was absolutely beautiful and described the experience of spotting and photographing it as like winning nature's lottery, because the chances of doing so were so small. As far as we know, there have been no other photographs of a penguin with this sort of colouring before. So you can imagine, you know, there was a lot of excitement about this, not just amongst scientists, but since the photographs went viral on social media, the photographer has been contacted by loads of people, including teachers who want him to speak in their school, and even a tattoo artist who's created a yellow penguin design inspired by the pictures. And in fact, Yves Adam has now been sent quite a lot of photographs of people's yellow penguin tattoos, which is very exciting.
Isn't it amazing how I think penguins, for some reason, are just so loved. There's something about them. So the idea of seeing a yellow one is quite fascinating. It's quite exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, I mean, I think the reason why they're so loved is because they're almost human-like, aren't they? There's something human about the way that they waddle along. But yeah, seeing something like that, which it seems as though it's never, ever been seen before, must have been absolutely mind-blowing.
And you also taught me two words there that I've just written down just to check I've got them right. Was it albinism and eucharistic? Is that right?
No, albinism and leucism.
Leucism.
Leucism. I think.
Lovely. Thank you very much for that. I've made a note of it in my little sketchpad here. Right, next up, Kieran, you have got something very big happening at the Week Junior Magazine. Is that right?
Yes, so this is something we've mentioned on the podcast before, but I couldn't resist mentioning it again. It is the Food Writer of the Year competition, which it runs between the Week Junior and the Guild of Food Writers. And there's only a few weeks left to get your entries in. They have to be in by the 30th of April. So here's a reminder of what you can do to get involved. It's a food writing competition. So if you love food and you love writing, combine them together, write a short story around the theme of food discovery, which can be interpreted however you like. There are different age categories, three of them in total, and depending on which age group you're in, you'll have a set word count that you need to make sure that you're under. There's some great prizes for the winners, including an invite to the Guild of Food Writers virtual tea party, a £100 book token, and for the 10 and under and 11 to 14 category winners, if you win, you'll have your stories featured in the Week Junior. As I said, there's only a few weeks left to enter. And to find out more, make sure you visit theweekjunior.co.uk/food discovery.
Right, now it's time to talk about our big debate. This week, we're asking whether athletes should boycott the Winter Olympics. Who can tell me a bit more about this one?
Well, that will be me, Bex. So the next Winter Olympic and Paralympic Games are due to be held in Beijing in China next year. Now, the Games, as you know, are among the world's most exciting and important sporting events, and athletes are usually proud to be picked to compete in them. However, more than 180 organisations have called on athletes to stay away from the Beijing Games because they believe that China has been treating certain groups of people very badly. Their objections include the brutal and unfair treatment of Uyghurs, and they are a group of people who live in China, many of whom follow the religion of Islam, also Tibetans and people in Hong Kong. China, however, rejects those claims and says it has not treated anyone unfairly. So what do you guys think?
Oh, this is interesting. So it's Kieran versus Michael. Each of you guys have a minute. Kieran, you're going to go first. You're going to say why athletes should boycott the Winter Olympics. So you've got a minute. Take it away whenever you're ready.
Sport is important. The Olympic and Paralympic Games are important. They're entertaining, inspiring, exciting, exhilarating. They are a rallying call to do more exercise, to find a sport that you enjoy, to push yourself to achieve new goals. However, they're not that important. They're not as important as standing up for what you believe in. They're not as important as protecting the lives of others or asking others to do the same. And they're not as important as calling out a country for behaving in a way that is unacceptable. The Olympics and Paralympics are a symbol of unity, of honour, of respect for others, of following the rules. And they should only really be held in places that represent those things too. If enough athletes and countries say that they won't take part in the Beijing tournament, it's not that it'll get cancelled, but it'll be moved somewhere else that better fits with the values of the Olympics and the Paralympics. And that, surely, is the right thing to do.
Oh, wow. I mean, that was very well argued. And also, you did the little switch around there at the beginning. I thought you were, like, arguing the side, and then you kind of turned it around. Big fan of that. Now, Michael, you've got Kieran's argument to respond to, so whenever you're ready, go for it.
So I think in a way we're putting pressure on the wrong people here. Athletes aren't politicians. They're not the ones who decided where the Olympics are going to be held. They're sports people, and they've been training their whole lives for a chance to compete at an Olympic Games. And for many of them, this might be their only opportunity. So it's putting a lot of pressure on them and asking a lot of them to essentially give up their life's work, their life's dream, over a decision that they had nothing to do with. And if they do want to make a stand and protest against this, arguably it could be better done at the event itself. If all the athletes boycotted and the tournament was taken away, as Kieran says, then some people might think that that's the job done and they'll kind of move on and forget about the underlying issue at hand here. Whereas if the athletes go to the tournament and potentially protest or make a stand there when the eyes of the world are on them, then that might actually put more pressure on governments to act and raise awareness of this issue a lot more. So I think there's lots of different ways that athletes can make a difference here, and it's putting a lot of pressure on them to give up their life's work over something they didn't decide.
Oh, lovely stuff, just under a minute. Right, Anna, what do you think of this week?
Wow, it's very, very difficult, isn't it? I mean, I agree with Kieran in that it's really, really important to stand up for what you believe in. And I think that people and countries should be called out for bad behaviour. And certainly boycotting the event would send the message that that behaviour that they've been accused of is not acceptable. However, I do agree with Michael that this isn't fair on the athletes concerned. And actually, perhaps the very fact that we're having conversations like this and that the spotlight is being turned on China might just keep that conversation alive. And as Michael has pointed out, make sure that governments take action and that perhaps the country in question is forced to act in a more positive way. So it's really difficult, but I think on reflection, I'm going to vote with Michael.
It's a really tough one this week, isn't it? And it's something I've been wanting to learn a little bit more about. So thank you guys for that, for helping me out. I'm going to say Michael ever so slightly has edged it for me. But I mean, let's face it, Anna, it's not up to us. It's up to the listeners to decide who's won, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
So they can respond to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/polls or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk with a video clip explaining which side of the debate they support and why. So last week on the podcast, we debated whether life was better in the past. And in our poll, it was actually pretty close again. 54% of you said no, life was better today, while 46% of you thought living in the past would have been a lot nicer. So here are some of your comments.
Emma emailed to say, I think the present day is much better than the past because we have medicines that help us recover and we have technology that has saved us through the lockdowns. Also, if you were in the past, life would probably be much harder than it is today. Constance agreed, writing, I think life now is better because if you get injured, you could go to the hospital and we have learnt from the past and we can still use things from the past. But in the past, you can't know many things from the future.
Evelyn sent us this brilliant clip supporting the idea of living in the past.
Hello, my name is Evelyn, 8 years old, and I think the past is better because it is more adventurous with more excitement. No screen time so that our eyes don't get square, and more animals. If we mix now with the past, it would be an amazing adventure for the world. The world would be a better place with loads of fun and an amazing life. Plus, there is no pollution, so no animals will get extinct, which is a big thing for the world. And we will have a lovely fresh air. Thank you.
On our podcast, Poppy told us, I think that life in the past was not better than life now. This is because in the past, we didn't have all the modern technology and medicine. If we say that life in the past was better, then we are throwing away people's great inventions.
There were lots of differing opinions on Pop Jam. One listener wrote, I think that life is better in the future as it has more technology and activities. And another told us, yes and no, because we had no means of virtual communication except through letters in the past, but we do spend a lot of time on screens now.
So as you just heard, this is your chance to get involved. Grab a grown-up and record a video telling us what you think of this week's debate. Then send it in to us at hello@theweekjunior.co.uk and we could play it out on next week's show. Now, before we go, of course, we have to reveal our real or rubbish story. Michael, can you remind me about it again, please?
So this was the French handstanding bunnies, the rabbits who move using handstands rather than hops.
I just can't read anything in your voice, Michael. French handstanding bunnies. That in itself is a phrase that sounds ridiculous. But is it just so ridiculous it might be true? That is my problem. French handstanding bunnies. It just seems one hop too far, I think. I'm going to say, on no reason other than I think it sounds more like it's a cartoon character than a real-life David Attenborough documentary, I am going to say it's rubbish. That's what I'm going to go for this week. That's it.
Drum roll, please. It's real.
What?
And if you're wondering why, recent research has shown that it's due to mutations in the bunny's genes that make them move this way. And genes are short sections of DNA in the cells of every living thing that instruct the body how to build and run itself. So it's due to differences in its DNA that it moves differently to other rabbits.
You know what? Because I got last week's right, I think I'm getting too cocky. And I was like, yeah, I think I've got this. I absolutely... clearly did not have a clue. That was a really fun story, though. Thanks, guys. That is it for the Week Junior Show this week. So goodbye to Anna.
Bye.
To Michael.
Goodbye.
And Kieran.
Goodbye.
Drop us a comment on Pop Jam at The Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk if you want to get in touch. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe or follow wherever it is you get your podcasts. Bye.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of The Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/The Week Junior and use the code PODCAST.